Hello and welcome to Truth in Journalism, a radio broadcast dedicated to applying the Word of God to current events. Well, today on Truth in Journalism, we're going to talk about flourishing. Our article is from the Religion News Network by Jaina Reese and is entitled, I Am Appalled by America. Today, I canceled all of our travel plans for the week after Christmas. My husband and I had made an Airbnb reservation down south with the hope of being able to repeat what we did for a couple of weeks this summer, have a socially distanced vacation with outdoor meals, visits to places like gardens and cemeteries and parks, and plenty of time to read. It's not going to happen. We had a terrific time in August on that tour of the upper Midwest, back when daily cases of the virus were between 35,000 and 50,000. My husband is a huge fan of lighthouses, so we saw several of those. I'm a fan of long walks, so we did those too. It was encouraging to me that even in the midst of a pandemic, when we didn't feel comfortable flying on a plane and weren't welcome as Americans many places in the world, we could drive around our own country, a happy dog in tow, to see the beauty of the Great Lakes. We also had backyard visits with several friends, a lifeline to this extrovert. I came home refreshed. Now, daily COVID-19 cases are topping 200,000 with no immediate relief on the horizon. Hospitals are taxed to the breaking point. Worst of all, the daily death toll has been over 2,800 this week, and that, too, shows no sign of slowing down. That's like having 9/11 repeated on a loop every single day. Except that this time, we don't need foreign terrorists to murder Americans. We're doing a damned efficient job of that all by ourselves. What has happened to our country? Compassion fatigue is one thing, and I get that. It's just not possible to read or watch every COVID death story anymore, because the emotional toll would be overwhelming. We've been in the grim throes of this pandemic for 9 months now, and our nation has lost over 276,000 souls so far. If we attended to every tragedy every day, we would go crazy. But there's a world of difference between the kind of stiff upper lip, keep calm and carry on mode that people naturally adopt in wartime, and the callous denial I see around me. The parking lot of my local mall is full to overflowing. Who are these people? And what shopping need is so pressing that it can't be postponed or ordered online? Everywhere, people are wailing about their individual freedoms being curtailed. Boo-hoo! They have to wear a mask when they visit the mall to buy shoes they'll wear to the holiday party that some very mean people have told them they shouldn't be attending. Those very mean people must be un-American, they cry, because everyone knows that America is about freedom to do whatever you want, wherever you want, whenever you want, even if your exercise of that freedom endangers other people. The blatant selfishness makes me afraid for the future of our country. This pandemic had the potential to draw our nation closer together, united in purpose against a common viral enemy. We've certainly been through far worse than this as a people. During World War II, our leaders asked us to pitch in, to make sacrifices for the common good, and for the most part, we did it. We recognize that short-term costs, buying Liberty Bonds, rationing gasoline, planting victory gardens, were far less invasive than the long-term costs of even more catastrophic losses should we balk at doing what was necessary for the good of the nation. Then, many Americans were asked to sacrifice their own or their families' lives to go to war on foreign soil. Now, many Americans think it's cruel and unusual punishment that we're being asked to stay at home and entertain ourselves with Netflix. Seriously, that is the sacrifice that our nation is asking of us right now, and we cannot stop bellyaching about the unfairness of it all. So my vacation is canceled. It was depressing to pull the plug on that potential spot of fun in the midst of so much sadness and uncertainty, but travel is a privilege I can't have right now. Getting together with family and friends is a privilege I can't have right now. It's not forever. Given the joyous news about how quickly scientists have been able to find a vaccine, the fastest vaccine turnaround time in world history. It's probably not even for another 9 months. Can we put other people's health before our own convenience while we wait for that? Please, America. Okay, so I have a lot of thoughts about this, like a lot. For instance, how does she possibly, in any possible sense, equate 9/11 with COVID? How? 9/11 was a premeditated act of terrorism carried out by religious fanatics. Coronavirus is a sickness that came from China. In 9/11, men planned, trained, armed themselves, and got fake IDs to board airplanes and then used them as missiles. Coronavirus is transmitted invisibly and almost always unintentionally. Often, there's some evidence through ventilation systems, which, by the way, would mean that staying at home and doing nothing might not be the best way to mitigate the disease, but that's another thing. She's equating an act of cold-blooded terror with people being transmission vectors for a disease they often don't realize they have. How? How are those possibly equivalent? In what universe are those the same thing? Second of all, if she wishes to pretend that there's some kind of moral equivalency between transmitting the virus through whatever she happens to consider recklessness and murder, then what about Governor Cuomo in New York? Is he a mass murderer? Governor Whitmer? Anyone who sent COVID patients back to nursing homes, are they murderers too? Or is it just people who, you know, don't want to wear a mask? Thirdly, if transmission is tantamount to murder, then it stands to reason that any transmission is tantamount to murder. So when she went on her grand tour of the Great Lakes, was she a murderer? How does she know she didn't transmit the virus? How does she know? And even if she could prove that she didn't have the virus whilst gallivanting about the Great Lakes, then where does she get off forcing other people to work when there's a coronavirus out there lurking in the shadows and dank alleys where vicious bad men in bloodletters sit plotting to pass within 6 feet of someone and or not wear a mask? If the Rona is so horrific, then how could she go on a trip and force people to be at work? Isn't she part of the problem? Isn't there, therefore, blood on her hands? Isn't she an accessory before the fact? Isn't she a dirty crim like those whom she denounces? And fourth, moreover, I presume that she hasn't gone to a store or restaurant or used any product that caused anyone to leave their home, because then she would be contributing to the problem. She's an accessory to murder, and an accessory before the fact is an accomplice, and that makes her a murderer. Fifth, she attempts to justify her little excursion by saying that the daily COVID test numbers were only nearly 50,000 per day. So, doesn't she care about those people? So it's okay for her to participate in murder as long as there's only a certain amount of it? What are the daily COVID numbers that she would be comfortable with murdering people in? When is it acceptable to participate in murder? It seems like for her, whenever it happens to suit her desires. Sixth, she talks about how scary it is to have 200,000 positive tests per day. Well, let's put that in perspective. That means that for everyone in the U.S. to be infected at that rate, it would take 1,650 days. That's 4.5 years. Would she like the spread slowed down even more? To what? 50,000 new cases per diem? That would mean that it would take 18 years for everyone to be infected at 50,000 new cases a day. Of course, I'm not taking into account that an enormous number of people are also already getting or have gotten the disease and either had no symptoms or symptoms mild enough to not warrant either getting a test or hospitalization, but neither is she. She expects you to be scared because 200,000 is a big number. But numbers need perspective. Is 200,000 a big number? Not compared to the overall population of America. I'd really like to know where she gets off. How can she justify her moral grandstanding? She thinks it's okay to go on vacation in the summer, but it's wrong for people to, what, leave their homes today? How out of touch is this woman? I love her comment, and this really is the key to my entire message. She says this, and I quote, "Now, many Americans think it's cruel and unusual punishment that we are being asked to stay home and entertain ourselves with Netflix. Seriously, that is the sacrifice that our nation is asking of us right now, and we cannot stop bellyaching about the unfairness of it all." I'm not sure if she's being deliberately obtuse or if she's a moron. What she may not know because she's a writer is that most people have to leave their homes to go to work so that they can provide goods and services like Netflix and, you know, food. You know, those things we all like food and running water and toilet paper and medicine and education and entertainment. I know that it must be hard for her to fathom, but some people have to go to work to go to work. We're not also blessed to sit alone at home and criticize others for a living. Some people have to do other things that they can't do at home. So what? They're supposed to not work? They're supposed to not have a job? They're supposed to lose their businesses? They're supposed to suffer through their civil liberties being violated? Why? Why should they? Because a plague with a plus 99% survival rate exists? Guess what, Dr. Reese? The Rona ain't going away. We're all gonna get it. That was the whole logic of a slow the spread. Oh, wait, I guess we forgot about that one. I guess it's no longer 4 feet good, 2 feet bad. Now we're on to 2 feet better. But the utter nerve it must take to decadently sit in her office and castigate her countrymen about how appalling their desire to avoid destitution is despicable. disgusting and appalling. I find her cavalier attitude towards the flourishing of other humans to be appalling. I find her appalling. And what's worse of it all is that this woman with a theological background is saying these things. She has a graduate level theological training, and she thinks that people sitting at home for an indeterminate amount of time, not working, and sitting in front of the television, binging on secular entertainment is supposed to be a viable option. Brothers and sisters, man cannot live by Netflix alone. Man cannot live by bread alone. We have needs, actual needs, not wants, but needs. And these needs are not being met by becoming hermits in a failing economy. People have needs that need to be met. People need to work. People need to play. People need to socialize. People need to see each other's faces. People need to physically touch. People need, and this is the greatest need of all, people need corporate worship. But what's her solution? Sit at home in front of the TV? Seriously? This woman has a PhD, and that's what she says is required of you, and you're a murderer if you try to do else? And here's the thing. She is out of touch, but that doesn't make her wrong. It makes her callous. She isn't wrong because she's a hypocrite. You can be a hypocrite and be right. And she isn't wrong because she's setting arbitrary standards and just deciding that certain data points are relevant based on nothing. She's wrong because she's telling you how to live, but her way for you to live is unlivable. And it's not just unlivable because of little details like the fact that governments can only print so much money before the value of the dollar crashes and we become a third world country. And it's not just unlivable because everyone staying home and watching Netflix means that there's no food, water, power, sewage, refuse cleanup, medical care, education, or entertainment, or anything else. I mean, she must be okay with some people being murdered. She's okay with murder as long as it permits her to maintain the quality of life she currently has, or a close approximation thereof. But it's more than that. It's unlivable because human beings cannot live without human society, and we cannot live without work, and we cannot live without worship. Jesus says man does not live by bread alone. We need people. People living in isolation shrivel up and die. We need work. Retirement is the number one killer of old people. We need worship. We must worship. We cannot live without worship. Granted, we can exist with a heartbeat and brain function, after a fashion, without worship. But it's not really a life worth living. And the skyrocketing suicide and depression rates bear this out. As we live in lockdown, America is being robbed of many of its idols. Work, money, pleasure, self-aggrandizement. And without these idols, without these cisterns, we're finally being made aware of the fact that we don't have living water. COVID has taken away the crutches, and we're realizing that we're cripples. The Rona removed our narcotics, and now we're living in the agonizing pain of living without God. This is good and bad. Insofar as it reveals to us how deeply empty our lives really are without Christ, it's a good thing. Insofar as it robs people of meaningful engagement with the world and the capacity for Christians to worship, it's a bad thing. The pandemic is going to reveal the thoughts of many hearts. The pandemic is showing us ourselves as we are, and we don't like what we see. Yes, the idols we have are soporifics. They keep Christians asleep when we should be on our feet contending for the faith. But these idols are only idols because things like friends, family, work, pleasure, and entertainment are good things that are gifts from God. They are good in themselves. Many are being prevented from idol worship. But for those who lived faithfully, this is a blow that will be hard to recover from. The refining fire always is. And let us not be so foolish as to think that the lockdowns and the civil liberties violations aren't evil just because they're yielding a positive result for the kingdom of God. God uses man's evil to bring about good. Indeed, that's how he's brought about the most good, the greatest good. That's how he brought about salvation, was through evil. In short, the lockdowns are unlivable, but they may be the path to life. I pray unbelievers will see how empty life without Christ truly is. I pray that Christians, that we as Christians will see this, will see our idols and our distractions being taken away, and we will use this as an opportunity to be purified from our love for the world and rededicate ourselves in love to Christ. Yes, the lockdowns are evil. Forcing people to stay at home with no social engagement, no work, and no worship is evil. But it might be the evil that brings about life. It might be the refining fire that brings about revival. I hope and pray it is. and I hope you'll join us again next time for another exciting episode of Truth and Journalism. Thank you, and may God bless your day to His glory.